And now we move on to talk about an up-and-coming show starting at the Yvonne Arno, running from the 9th to the 19th of February, starring Jane Asher, Clive Francis and Belinda Lang, and it is The Reluctant Debutante. Now, being curious about all forms of entertainment and hosting a film music show that I do on a Sunday night at 9 p.m, as many of you will know, I discovered that the play The Reluctant Debutante had been made into a film in 1958, directed by the legendary Vincent Minnelli. And I asked my next guest, Jane Asher, had she become aware of any major differences between the play and the film when I caught up with her during the rehearsals for the play?
Yes, there are. I mean, as you say, the stage play came first. And interestingly, although it was a huge hit at the time, Cecilia Johnson, who played originally the wife, although it was a huge hit, it hasn't really ever been done since. I think it's been one tiny production somewhere in a very small theatre, but it hasn't ever been done in a sort of serious production. And yes, I then got hold of a copy of the film because I had seen it years ago, but I wanted to remind myself. And it was changed quite a lot because in the film, the daughter, my daughter, the character's daughter, was played by Sandra Dee, who was an American film star of the time. Mm. Obviously, they had her in, I assume, to get the money for the film and to give it more publicity and so on. So they had to rewrite quite a lot to justify the daughter being American. So that in the film, in fact, she was my stepdaughter, was the daughter of my husband's first marriage, and not my own daughter at all, which changed it really quite considerably. Also, of course, being a film, they opened it out a lot, as they call it, so that you actually went to some of the parties and things that they talk about in the play. And I have to say, genuinely, I was very pleased to find, when I watched the film, that by far the funniest and the best and truest sections of it were the ones that were taken directly from the play. And the play is still so funny, I think. I mean, what I wouldn't be doing if I didn't. It's very, very funny, very satirical, because obviously, even at the time, William Douglas Hume was being extremely satirical about the whole business of what almost amounts to putting your daughter on the market. And now, of course, looking back at it as a sort of period piece, because it's obviously in the mid to late 50s that all this was going on in this play, even more you see it as a big extraordinary ritual that it was. So yeah, the play's terrific.
Wasn't it? It must be great fun to be back on stage. Do you relish those witty one-liners and the sparkling dialogue?
I will do. We're at a stage of rehearsals where you think, oh, is it ever going to be right and how can we do it and I'm going to be dreadful and all that. But I know enough about myself now, having been doing this for 55 years or whatever it is. I always feel like that, and hopefully by the time we come to do it, it'll be great fun. Yes, it's wonderful dialogue, and I absolutely revel in it. And once we all know what we're doing, and I mean, obviously at this stage in rehearsal, you're still trying to decide where we should all be standing, what you should be doing, and so on, and learning lines, of course, all those sort of basic technical things.
Yes.
But once we get it going, I think it'll be terrific fun to play.
Yes.
Already, we're making each other giggle with some of the lovely moments in the play. It's very sort of joyful, although it's all very silly and about something so completely anachronistic, the whole debutante season. It's a very kind of joyful play, and hopefully this is the kind of evening out that will really take people out of themselves and give them a laugh.
Another actress who you're working with, who's been well used to working on plays of this kind of genre and mores, and of course it's Belinda Lang, who's now turned director. How are you enjoying working together?
Very much indeed. We've known each other for quite some time, but I've never worked for her as a director, and I have to say she is absolutely wonderful. Mm. And of course there is an advantage in having a director who is also an actor. Obviously, you mainly work with directors who haven't been actors, but there's a kind of shorthand, because they know the problems and the pluses and the minuses of what the way you put something across and what you're trying to do. So it's very, very useful in that way. And of course, wonderfully, she's also playing a very funny part in it. So it's a joy to work with her. We get on terribly well, and I think we think along exactly the same wavelength, which is great.
That's really crucial, isn't it? And also, sensibility of an actor can understand another actor as well,
exactly.
Which really helps.
You can, yes, the terror and all that.
Yes.
We all bond together, in fear in different moments of the whole process.
Yes, well, of course, it's not always the same with directors, and you've worked with a fair few, and of course, it's not only appearing on stage, but screen, even as a young child, as Nina in the classic film Mandy. It's a wonderful film. How early did you get the bug to perform, and what do you think gave you this bug?
Well, you see, it's very hard to say, because when I did that film, Mandy, that you were talking about, I was 5. Now, did I have the bug before that? I really don't know. I mean, all children are natural show-offs to some extent, and most of them have a terrific facility for acting, because it sort of comes naturally to be pretending and so on.
Mm.
I'll never really know. I mean, I did this little bit in a film. I wasn't the main character, Mandy. I had a very small part, but I loved it. I can remember being in Manchester at the school for deaf and dumb children, as they were then called. I do remember that, and being away from home and so on. I think somebody saw me in the street and said, oh, she'd be perfect for that little part. And of course, once I'd done that and a couple of other bits in films, I was hooked. I mean, it's a very addictive thing to do. I never really considered seriously doing anything else. So it's hard to say whether the bug would have appeared naturally or whether it was instilled in me by doing it from such a young age.
Quite a pivotal film to be in as well. I mean, it's a very sort of daring subject.
Wonderful, but very sensitively handled. And Mandy Miller, who played the main role, and I think I did 2 other films with her as a child, she was absolutely terrific.
Mm.
Really wonderful. And you didn't feel she was acting it for a minute. It's a lot of your listeners will know, it's a story of a child who can't hear or speak, and what kind of schooling she should have and how it should be handled and so on. Again, a lot of issues that are still very relevant today, and it was a great film.
Yeah, very groundbreaking. Mm. And of course, you're playing a mother yourself in The Reluctant Debutante, wanting only the best for her daughter. But looking at your childhood, the fact that your mother was a professor of oboe.
Yes, I was very lucky. I mean, both my parents were very happy for me to go into acting, and I think perhaps the fact that my mum had been herself a performer in orchestras and so on, and then obviously moved more into teaching once she had children of her own. But I think that meant she understood the whole process. And my father was a doctor, and funnily enough, I think a lot of people would recognize that the medical profession in some ways is not unlinked to showbiz. Definitely similarities. But they always made it absolutely clear that I had to keep up with schoolwork. I went to an ordinary school, not an acting school.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was always told if ever I got behind, I obviously would have to stop the acting. And it was very important that I had an education and so on. And I'm grateful to them for that, because not only is it obviously nice to grow up learning a bit of stuff, but also I was never really able to kind of show off too much about it, because I would just get ribbed at school mercilessly. So I had to, in a way, keep that in a separate compartment of my life. So I kept doing it all through school days and so on. And of course, when I was working on films, I remember doing a film called The Greengage Summer, which, of course, starred lovely Suzanne York, who said sadly just died. But doing that film when I was 13 and 14... Of course, when you're filming on the set and away for a while, you have a tutor. And, of course, you learn so much with the tutor. It's virtually one-on-one with a brilliant teacher. Mm-hmm. So I was able to take my O-levels pretty early and all that, because I'd had a lot of advantages, really, in being on film sets, which was very lucky.
Mm, yes, it really was, wasn't it? I mean, you've worked with such greats, you know, Michael Caine and Alfie, and once again, Susanna York, as I say, in The Quatermass Experiment. And do you still find yourself more drawn back to treading the boards rather than venturing into film?
I love doing all of it, really.
Mm.
And if you've done one for a very long time, if I've been in a TV series for maybe you're doing TV for a year or so, I begin to long to get back to doing a bit of theatre. But equally, of course, if you're in a run in the theatre, after 6 or 7 months, you think, oh, never again. So I love going from one to the other. It's the perfect thing.
Mm.
There are very few film opportunities, obviously, for somebody at my sort of level.
Mm.
I mean, the last film I did was Death at a Funeral, I guess, which was lovely, and I loved it. I was working with Frank Oz, such a delight.
Oh, how
very
wonderful.
Funny. But I love doing television, and I love my role in Holby, where I kind of pop in and out every now and then. It's perfect.
I
go off and do other things, then do a little bit of that. So, I love all of it, and it really is, it sounds a cliche, but it's the part and the writing and the story that's the important thing.
I guess a burning question is the theatre props department going to allow you to display one of your delicious cakes that you're so renowned for? Do you think they'll allow that?
No, no. I don't think my character would probably go near the kitchen. I think she'd just be instructing the cook, so I fear not. But no doubt there'll be some cakes appearing backstage. I mean, whatever I do, obviously at some stage I'm very much expected to produce a cake. So
there's no getting out of it, Jane.
No getting out of it at all. No, and I love it. It's really good fun. So we'll probably have a cake for our first night at Guildford, or certainly at some stage we will.
Oh, fabulous. Well, I understand you also did a Death by Chocolate cake for the 120th anniversary of Agatha Christie. Do you know if any of the productions?
Really interesting. Yeah. It was because in the story the play was based on, Death by, I don't know what it's called, the actual story itself. But anyway, yes, we did this wonderful cake because in the story there is quite a good description of this recipe. I think it was a German cook in the story who invented this cake or made this cake for them. But it was very vague, so we very much had to experiment and try different things. But it did end up as the most delicious, wonderful cake. And we decorated it with a little bit of gold leaf and things like that on the top. And it worked terribly well. No, we love it when we get commissions like that, that are just a bit different.
You know, it's
and
fabulous.
Linked with something special. It's
really
fun.
And I wonder, did this turn up in any of the Agatha Christie productions up and down the country? It'd be nice, wouldn't it, if it did?
It would be nice.
Hmm.
Yes, that's a very good idea, because if they did do a production of that particular story, I guess it's quite possible they would have to eat a bit of the cake on stage.
And, or in the restaurant.
lovely to copy the recipe, because it really was very indulgent and very delicious.
Oh, yes, Death by Chocolate indeed. And, of course, I mean, aside from, obviously, the different roles in the profession that you've done and your exquisite cake-making business, you're also an author, and you've written 3 best-selling novels. Can you tell us a bit about what inspired you to write?
It's a funny thing, writing fiction. It is so different. I've written a lot of non-fiction books, obviously the sort of cake books and so on, and various different things over the years. But turning to fiction is very, very different. And the first one was completely terrifying. I was inspired to write that one because an editor at HarperCollins approached me out of the blue and said, I've been reading lots of interviews that you've given when I was publicising things and so on. And she said, I feel there's a novel inside you, because I had said something about wanting to write. And she approached me in such a kind of sensible way, and so she was so supportive. And I thought, because I'd had this idea vaguely floating around my head but never felt brave enough to try it, and she really gave me the confidence to sit down and make a start. And, of course, that's what we all need. If you feel somebody believes in you, it really gives you that impetus to have a go.
Definitely.
But I, of course, found it incredibly hard, and hopefully the writing, and I very much learnt this from my father, who, as being a doctor, was a wonderfully witty and lucid writer. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, the writing eventually appears to be relatively angst-free, and just, you know, you read it without really thinking about the process or the technicality of how it's put together. But getting to that point, of course, can be a great deal of work. And that's the big difference. I think when you're writing a recipe or writing instructions, it's pretty obvious how you've got to put it clearly and simply and so on. But when you write fiction, you just know you could go on rewriting until, you know, it gets better and better and better. Whether I'll do a fourth one, I've had the idea for a few years now, but it's getting down to it that's the problem, that we all know with most things in life. You can have wonderful ideas, but it's actually getting on with it that's tricky.
Getting on the
hopefully
page.
Hopefully I will produce a fourth one eventually. Yeah. We're now quite good at compartmentalising, and I think I can be quite good at that, at snatching time and switching my brain over to whether it's running the cake business or trying to write a book. So who knows? Hopefully, I certainly at the moment wouldn't dare think about writing fiction, because I'm just desperately trying to learn lines.
There's only so many words you can take in at one point.
There's only so many words you can take in at once. Exactly. I mean, hopefully I shall get back to it eventually.
Well, yeah, definitely. I'm sure a lot of your very popular listeners will be in anticipation of that. I mean, how did you find the process of structuring a novel? Was it very daunting?
Very daunting. Yes, very daunting, and I didn't know whether to try it in the first person or the third person. There's all those kind of choices to make. It just took me a lot of shuffling around, a lot of rewriting, and I think I'm happiest probably with the second novel, where I slightly lost the terror of how on earth do I go about this. I'd had experience of people enjoying the first one, so I knew that it was something that I could do, that at least some people would like very much and enjoy. So I think the second one, I was slightly less panic-stricken about the whole process of structuring it, so that it flowed a little bit easier and better. But it's never easy. And I just I love reading so much, and the authors I like are also utterly brilliant. So it's very daunting to think you can even attempt to put something
The comparison
paper,
comes in, then, doesn't it? I guess, but then you also do absorb through that, and it must reflect in your own writing.
Absolutely. I think if one learns anything about how to write, it mostly, of course, comes from reading, unquestionably.
Yes, well,
it soaks in somewhere.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it does actually absorb, doesn't it? And it stays with you and then comes out at the appropriate time.
But, hopefully.
Yes, exactly. Well, I know when both The Longing and The Question came out, people were very surprised at the tone of the writing, saying they didn't expect it to be so dark.
I know. You see, they didn't particularly seem dark to me, but then I live with myself all the time, so I'm kind of used to what I am. And I also think it was partly a contrast with the whole kind of cakey, nice Jane image thing, which is, of course, nonsense. You know, images are always way off the truth. Because how could anyone possibly know what you're really like?
Exactly.
So I think the whole contrast between what appeared to be the image of what I was like and those books was perhaps what made people say they were dark. I mean, they're not light-hearted, there's no question. There's light-hearted areas in them, but they're all fairly dark, serious themes. But I think that's what I seem to be attracted to.
Oh, did you like the fact that you surprised so many people?
Not especially. I just liked the fact that they enjoyed reading them. I think I was absolutely ready to be shot down. I think anyone that's in one profession and then attempts to break into another one, you have to be ready for a lot of criticism, especially if you've got any kind of name like I did. You know, people love to shoot you down, and you have to be ready for that. And luckily, being an actor, one's very, very used to being criticised and reviewed. It's part of the process.
Get that thick skin, don't you? Yes.
You have to be. I don't think you ever get thick skinned, but you have to. Well, the way I suppose I handle it, and with reviews, for instance, if I'm in a play, I don't read them for the first few weeks, and that's not because I can't bear being criticised, because it's all part of the job. But if you're still in the early stages of doing performances of a play, because after all, the opening night is only the beginning, really. You've gone working on it, you know, through the run. And if you're still in those early stages, and a review can be very destructive, even if it's good, and I mean that genuinely. If somebody says, you know, the way Jane Asher says this line is absolutely wonderful, whatever, you come to say that line, you say, oh, God, this is where I'm wonderful. How do I do it?
Yes.
And it can be very, very throwing until you're quite secure about what you're doing.
Yes.
So I always read them eventually, because it's interesting to see what people think, but I don't read them initially. With theatre, with film or television, it doesn't matter, because you've done it, the performance is captured, and there's nothing you can do about it. But with theatre, it can be very destructive. So I don't think you ever get thick-skinned, but you get to try and see it kind of objectively.
Sort of just let it sort of wash over to a certain extent, because are the expectations good or bad? You suddenly start to monitor yourself.
You can't please everybody. I mean, are, of course, totally varied in their tastes, and somebody might love the way you do something, somebody else might hate it, and you have to accept that.
Well, that's true. I'm sure people, I know they're really looking forward to another novel. Do you have plans to write another novel?
I'll try, as I say. yes, I've always got plans, but putting plans into practice is a different thing. But I really do hope to get down to it, because as I say, I have had, I think, quite a good idea for some time, and I'll try and crack on with
it. Of course, I mean, talking of writing, you can't get much more controversial than Private Eye. What is it about that paper that made you want to be a shareholder?
Oh, it was many, many, many years ago. They were in serious trouble because they'd, I assume, had loads of libel suits and things they had to pay for, and they were going to go under, and they wrote to all kinds of people, including me. I didn't know any of them personally. And I just felt that voice was very important. It was one of the few satirical magazines around. And you need, I think, somebody knocking the establishment. And I just felt it would be a shame if this went under. I'm not saying everything they do is perfect, and they obviously make mistakes, but I thought it was important they survived. So I just sent them £100. You know, it was no more than that. But in theory, made me a shareholder, but it sounds very grand. But it's only just sending them a bit of money to keep them going. Really.
It's a belief, you know, people have a voice, all sort of writing voices out there, aren't there?
But of course,
I mean, the role you play in the reluctant debutante, Sheila Broadbent, only has her daughter's interests at heart. But it seems that you have so many more interests outside of theatre as well. And you're a president and staunch supporter of some really wonderful charities and organisations.
Yeah, wonderful charities. I'm really lucky. I always think, in a way, that anyone with any kind of name gets asked to do a great deal of charity work, inevitably. And I always think we're very lucky that most people are asked for money all the time, as we all are, you know, asked to give money to good causes. And we're very lucky that there's something else we can do that hopefully is also useful. And I always feel that if I can use whatever skills I've got as a communicator on behalf of people that perhaps don't have those skills very easily, and I'm thinking particularly of autism in this case, then I'm very privileged to be able to do that. And I always get an enormous amount of satisfaction out of it, charities that I work with. And my three main ones are the National Autistic Society and Parkinson's UK and Arthritis Care. Those are my three presidencies. And with all those, the kick I get out of it, obviously, is seeing that the work we're doing is actually paying off, whether I go to a school for children with autism and see them blossoming, or I see people with arthritis going through one of our challenging pain courses and see the way that can change their lives. And equally with Parkinson's, particularly in the area of research, you know, we fund so much research and things are moving on so quickly.
I
enjoy it, obviously, and I wish I could do more than I do. I hate having to turn anything down, and we all get so many requests all the time. You can't do everything. But yes, a very important part of my life. I'm lucky to be able to do it.
Well, Jane, it just remains for me to say thank you so much for talking with us on the show.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the run. I do hope the listeners come see and enjoy it. I can promise a good laugh anyway.
Oh, well, that's all we want, isn't it? A good old laugh. Oh, yeah. Thanks very much, Jane.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was Jane Asher, who will be appearing locally in The Reluctant Debutante at the Yvonne Arnault Theatre in Guildford.